Alright, there's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
Make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure if I'm quite drunk enough to see Meet the Beatles.
Of course you didn't. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Internet. One of those covers of the video store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep. What in the hell is this and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching?
So, yeah, we almost got started, and I was like, oh, shit, hold on, where's Evan? And I was like, I know.
Sorry,
if this episode comes out and Evan hears that we did Gross Point Blank without him, he's going to be like, what the fuck? And I'm like...
I would mostly probably do that if you did, like, Fight Club, and I wasn't in that.
Oh, word. Well, good to know.
Good to know.
But I know you've been.
Fight Club is like my favorite movie of all time. So,
but I know you're down with this one, and that you've been wanting to do this one with us too. And since you did John Wick,
you showed this movie to me.
Yeah. Oh fuck yes! I love these stories. This is awesome.
Yeah.
But
we watched it with my dad, and it was at the old house. Well, not the old house. It's at the house of Poughkeepsie, and we're watching this movie. And I think we were watching. We'd watched Monster Squad and 300 the night before, and then the next day.
it's like we're doing the whole catalog of what am I watching.
Monster Squad and 300, guess how long ago this was? You brought over 300 in HD.
I was going to say,
in
this
the
is
red case.
Yeah, this is like 2007 maybe, because I was in town for a friend's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
For I don't know if did you know Nicole Zenowitz in WAC? She was in your class. That it was part of the reason I hung out during your senior week. By the way, welcome to What Am I Watching, everybody?
The first time, and to tie it all together, the first time I saw Gross Point Blank was because WAC showed it. It was one of their free movies.
Oh, dude, and that was what made me want to get into like filmmaking and stuff, was like they were showing free movies my first like week of school freshman year.
And they did that all year long, though.
Sweet. Yeah, that was down in the quad, right?
I'm
not in the quad, in the campus lawn, or was it in the theater?
It was in the theater.
Oh, okay.
Small theater.
Which has now been redone, from what I hear.
Right.
Anyway, joining me tonight, your host, Dave the Clone, for the Hollow Knight Network on the What Am I Watching podcast, where we're clearly talking about the spiritual predecessor to one of our favorite films that we've done not too long ago, which would be John Wick. This is Gross Point Blank, and joining me tonight, as always, is Gomez Not Adams.
Hello!
And you've recognized that voice anywhere. It's the voice of reason packing heat. It's Cousin Evan.
What's up, people?
And, you know, I was thinking today, because basically this is like a lighthearted John Wick. I was kind of like, if you took... Like, I remember always thinking that, like, Martin Q. Blank was, like, one of my lexicon of cool, defined people, you know, like... Always dressed in that black suit, super cool, actually a super nice guy, but clearly a killer for hire. I mean, the guy's got some kind of moral gray area ambiguity going on. But then I was thinking, like, yeah, I guess these days I would be somewhere between, like, Martin Blank and Bane mentally. And then I was like, and what do you get when you combine those two? Oh, you get John Wick. Okay. So we're all kind of in this neighborhood now. And so it's like we couldn't get too far from John Wick without covering this one.
It's like if John Wick was a rom-com.
Exactly.
Actually, a lot of it was like, so let's take John Cusack's characters that he played in the 80s.
Yes.
Accelerate it. But imagine there was a time skip of 10 years. What would be the most insane thing that he could have? I know he could go be a killer for the U.S. government.
Yeah, I mean,
perfect.
Actually, this is very Lloyd Dobler. I mean, right? This, like, he was already a kickboxer, so he's kind of getting the martial arts down and the discipline, and maybe that's where the moral ambiguity or what does he say his psychological profile showed? A moral flexibility.
Stability.
Yeah. He's like, I took a test and showed a moral flexibility, and they put me in a special program.
You know, it's like, she's like, so you're a government spook? Well, you know, it's all just PR.
I killed the president of Paraguay with a fork.
It's all PR anyway.
It's all relevant.
Wow. And so, I mean, this, when you, and, you know, watching it again to sort of get reacquainted, this is the 1997 film directed by George Armitage, starring John Cusack, Joan Cusack, Dan Aykroyd, Minnie Driver, Alan Arkin, Hank Azaria, Jeremy Piven, and the recently deceased on The Walking Dead, Michael Cudlitz.
I forgot he was in this movie.
And worth calling attention to is the score was done by Joe Strummer.
There you go.
Of the Clash.
Oh, there you go, which is, of course, why the Clash songs are so perfectly used at the times that they are. Not only an awesome movie, but this was a kick-ass soundtrack as well.
It was, very much so.
Like an Essential Collections soundtrack. We were talking about, before we got on the horn here, Ev, about how odd it is for the way of the timing of when this movie came out and how we all feel about it, because it is the kind of movie that you instantly, I think, fall in love with because it's awesome, but yeah. It's like, you know, Gomez and I were talking, it's like, you know, we were kids during the 80s. This came out in the late 90s, and it's like a nostalgia film for the 80s, but for us now, it's a nostalgia film because it came out in the 90s, and we're so far away from when it came out. What is it like for you, because you're even a, like, sort of a generation behind us, even, like us, like,
yeah.
You're like the half musical step down from our.
Yeah, I would call it Generation Y, or I hate the term millennial,
because
that's Generation X, but and this movie was definitely geared towards Generation X, but I still go back and watch this, and it's like, oh, you know, I wonder, you know, in 10 years when I, you know, like in 2022, I think, because I graduated 2012, you're like, man, what's the weirdest thing out of 780 kids that I graduated with? What's the weirdest thing that they're going to be? You know, like, is one of them has to be, you know, a hitman.
Yeah.
Right? Like, come on.
And it's territory that eventually would be owned by, like, the Sopranos. You know, like, we have a hitman going to a therapist. We have a hitman going home to his high school reunion because his secretary thinks it would be good for him emotionally. We have a hitman who's obsessed with his high school girlfriend who he left on prom night to go and actually become the government agency spook who becomes a hitman. You know what I mean? It's like there's a lot of layers to this that were so sort of ahead of its time, or they're just pieces that other people extrapolated and expanded on to make, like, spin-off type projects. You know?
Not that we're going to go down the rabbit hole quite so quickly, but we are.
We live in the rabbit hole. The fucking rabbit has been evicted.
If you think about it, analyze this, which was the Billy Crystal De Niro film, came out in 99, same year as this, which was all about going to the psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very much that film. So I mean, that I think that was like a late 90s thing where everybody was in therapy.
Yeah, even the criminals. And it was like,
especially the criminals,
it was almost like socially acceptable to kind of be a career criminal as long as you were somebody like Martin Blank, like someone who is like educated and is like cultured and carries themselves in a manner as if they are just a successful business owner when they're around the, you know, public. But yeah, when it comes down to the things he's doing, it's like he's the consummate professional, you know. He's almost, and now this is also around the same time as a couple of years after Leon the Professional hit the theaters, known only in the U.S. as The Professional. And there's some even similarities there. It was sort of like, this was maybe the dawn of the anti-hero. Is that kind of what's going on here? Because I mean, we are cheering for him. He's very much got the same John Cusack charm from all of his previous 80s roles, you know?
Well, I mean, it's also very much the John Cusack damaged character, right? So it's like, here's the guy that all the girls want to rush out and save. And I think that was part of his allure at the time.
Yeah. And
except
then,
for his ex-girlfriend who's working in a radio station, despises him because, you know, he left her on prom night.
Like, to be fair, I would probably hate him too if he did that.
And if I were her father, I'd hate his ass the most because I probably would have paid for the $700 prom dress or whatever she said it was.
Hey, you know what though? They definitely were not having sex on prom night. He might have given them a pass.
Oh, but they had sex plenty before that, as we learn later when he does go visit her at her house, and they call it the magic bed. But it's, again, such a cultured way. I mean, this is like a very clean movie, you know what I mean? But it's got so much cool factor going on, because it's playing in the sandbox of, like, the non-clean action-type movies as well.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to look at it this way, it's like, do we ever really know why John Cusack is going out and killing these people? Well, he's probably working for the auto industry, knocking off whistleblowers.
Right now, in Detroit, yeah.
But, well, in general, though. That's probably where he's taking these contracts from.
Well,
because didn't he say that he was in the government, he was working for the government for a while, and then he went, like, private? Because
yes,
now,
exactly.
Because he has his own private company that he doesn't really want to do anymore. He's like, I'm kind of done killing people. I've killed enough people, you know, in my life. I could just move on now. And I'm, you know, my sister is being a naggy bitch and making me go to my goddamn high school reunion. I guess I'll do that.
Well, I don't think she's actually. Yes, it's being played by Joan Cusack, but yeah. I think it's actually just supposed to be his secretary,
yeah.
Not his sister.
I don't think they were supposed to be related. But they were
Kind of hard to miss that, since it is John and Joan Cusack. And not the first time they collaborated with each other.
Yeah, I was going to say, they've been in so many films together in this sort of, like, antagonistic-type relationship to each other in everything they've been in. You know what I mean? It's like, especially the movie after this that George Armitage did, which was High Fidelity.
Yep. It's like if you actually want to see the true spiritual successor to this film, it's War, Inc.
Right.
Like a very adversarial role.
Right. Which we were mentioning last time when we were talking about John Wick, I think. And I was like, yeah, I haven't seen War, Inc. We got to see War, Inc.
I've not seen that either. We must watch it.
Now that we're creating a trilogy of films that actually have nothing to do with each other on the production side, but from our side of the screen, we're like, hey, hey, wait a minute, guys. You're all, yeah.
Piece the puzzles together.
Like, I almost, at this point, want there to be a crossover between this universe with Martin Blank and John Wick. Like, I want John Wick to have to go get Martin Blank out of retirement after John Wick Part 2. You know what I mean? Like, because imagine, like, this when Dan Aykroyd's character, which we haven't even touched on yet in this movie, we haven't even really talked about the plot, because there's more plot than just Hitman Goes to High School Reunion. There's all these other things going on, too. But I just love the idea that maybe there was a time where another guild was sort of, like, created, you know what I mean, or another assassins group, and that maybe he wasn't a member of it, maybe Martin Blank never joined, but, like, the one that John Wick is a part of, they're, like, mature. They won't try to kill you for not joining their group, you know what I mean?
They allow for independent operators.
Yeah.
What I think would be really cool is, like, if John Wick's walking through Rome and the new John Wick 2 movie coming out, and just, you know, Martin Blank's just sitting there sipping a cup of coffee, looks at John Wick, raises a cup of coffee, and just walks away.
Yeah, like, they both know each other, and anyone who's seen this movie will understand. Hopefully, if you've listened to our podcast, you'll be like, no shit, this is what those guys were talking about! And then
super rights.
And then, I mean, can you imagine a genre splash between these two? Because, like, this is very much a dark comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Like unabashedly so. I think,
but it falls very much more on the comedic side.
Yes, yes. And, like, with the timing and the framing and everything. John Wick, if it's funny, it's for that moment of comic relief amidst a sea of a psychotic revenge film.
Yeah. It's there to give you a breath of air.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Evan, what were you saying?
I'm sorry, I think there's only one or maybe two scenes that could be considered, you know, a little humorous if you're on the humor side.
For John Wick.
Yeah, for John Wick.
Like, flat-out humorous. Like, like, the only scenes that feel different are the scenes in the beginning when he's driving. That's, like, they don't feel like they were part of this crazy, like, you know, precision killer revenge movie. But Martin Blank is very much the same kind of precision killer, you know what I mean? Like, he's got the same level of discipline. We see him with the case of all his tools, and he's very proficient in a lot of different ways of doing his job.
Mm-hmm. But he's very much in a slump right now. His is not a personal slump. It's very much more of an existential, what am I doing with my career slump?
Right.
Like, in the beginning of the movie, when he's performing a hit, he's trying to kill somebody. Like, he's trying to kill them through the air vent by dropping, like, poison into their mouth while they're asleep, and they wake up like in the middle of it because like something happens, and John's like, fuck, he goes downstairs and just shoots him in the face. He's like, man, I'm losing my edge. Like, you can just see it like going through his head. He's like, man, I need to go into retirement, fuck this guy.
and he goes to therapy. Like, the next thing we see him is he's in his therapy. He's like, you know, I'm having some trouble at work, some concept execution stuff, nothing too crazy, but still. And you're just like, whoa, you're opening the door an awful lot. And Alan Arkin, who is hilarious as Dr. Oatman in this movie, it's like you could see he's horrified of Martin. Like, horrified of
him. And scared. He knows. And scared shitless. Like, you just like, that wasn't a friendly thing to say, saying that you know where I live.
He's like,
that's not how we build trust.
He's like, Martin. He's like, maybe, just maybe, you're feeling a little down because of the, you know, the impact of, I don't know, killing a lot of people, something like that, you know.
Not to become one of them.
And he goes, and on top of that, you know that according to the law, if you've committed a crime or if you're planning on committing a crime, I'm supposed to tell the authorities. He's like, I know about the law, but I want to be open. I'm respecting the process. Plus, I know where. I know where you live. And he goes, whoa, see, now what's that? You can't say that. Now you're holding me hostage here. That's not right. That wasn't designed to make me feel safe or feel comfortable. He's like, all right, come on. The thought didn't cross my mind. It did cross your mind, and it came out your mouth. And you're just like, oh, shit. Wow.
But then it's like, I feel like he doesn't take himself seriously because, you know, like, it's like, you know, like Gomez says that he's going through a slump. Like when he's driving with his old buddy from high school, he's like, oh man, you know, 10 years, what the fuck? He's like, well, I became a contract hitman. The guy looks at him and he's like, 10 fucking years, yeah, man.
Like, it's like nobody, yeah, nobody believes
him. You're hanging out with your best friend that you haven't seen in a while. He's like, what have you been up for the past few years? Oh, I became a contract hitman. Okay, cool, whatever.
Oh, wow, you get dental with that? Or yeah.
Like, you don't take that kind
of shit.
He's
just smoking a joint, like, not giving a damn.
Everybody, you know, I guess also at the 90s was still kind of there was some of the old 80s leftover of, like, the power professional. Like the young, late 20s, early 30s, high-powered executive. And so it's like, when he goes, I'm a professional killer, they're just like, oh, yeah, man, yeah, I get it. You're making a shit ton of money. But, like, what? No one then follows up with but what do you actually do? And he's like, no, that is what I do. I'm a professional killer. But, like, nobody takes it seriously until they actually see it with their own eyes. You know what I mean?
He might as well have just said that he's in middle management. Go,
bam.
Yeah, he could have said that. He could have said, I own it. Pacific Trident Global, which is his cover company, is... on the door, it says it's a shipping company. So
right, what are you in? Oh, import-export.
Yeah, I'm an importer. What do you import? Body bags.
lots of ammunition. Because that's one of the great scenes, as far as I'm concerned, is Joan Cusack going back and forth between it, trying to give instructions on how to cook a soup.
Yeah, to like her sister or a friend.
Not delivering the ammunition that she ordered.
She's like, yeah, hold on a second. Let's go over this again. And she's like flipping from the clipboard going, yeah, 35,000 rounds of 9mm subsonic. You had that. I gave that to you on the fucking list. You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, well, I don't give a good goddamn where it is. You're just like, holy people used to tell. I mean, I guess they still do. I guess there are industries and there are businesses where people do treat each other like dog shit like this, but. That used to be a much more, I think, less laws protecting people against it kind of thing, and more common occurrence on the day-to-day kind of thing.
Yeah, you still don't see people yelling. You never saw people yelling at each other about, where are my 35,000 rounds of 9mm subsonic?
Yeah.
The Patriot Act wasn't installed yet. They couldn't tap into your phone, so you could say whatever the fuck you wanted.
Yeah, true, true.
You know she's using a secure line.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, probably. She, like, checks for taps and stuff.
And it's probably bounced off, like, several satellites, communication satellites that, like, the private sector isn't supposed to know about. Yeah. You know, because I always imagine, too, there's a side of this where he's got to be, like, and even, like, the person she was yelling at on the phone, it's almost like in a video game when you have your, like, black mark intricate connection who could drop you weapons while you're in the field. And I'm totally thinking of like Alpha Protocol and, you know, Call of Duty, shit like this, where you're like
mercenaries,
where you could just like go into like a little computer and be like, oh, hey, I need 5 airstrikes. I've got enough money for that. You know what I mean? And the next thing you know,
and Joan Cusack is the person making sure that you have that.
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, to the point where she can also like, she's his Alfred, you know, like when he's walking around Grosse Pointe, Michigan, which is where he's from, Martin Blank, hence the title, Grosse Pointe Blank, guys.
All together.
And when he's walking around the town, he's noticing that there are all these other people around, like people who don't fit in. It's also, it's reunion weekend. We learned early on that he got mail at his office, that his high school reunion. So they know that his company is Pacific Trident Global. They just don't know that he's a hitman, which is odd when I think about it now. We may have just discovered a slight hiccup for this movie because everyone always says, we don't know what happened to you. Like, you disappeared. You know, you like, even the teacher's pool, we all thought, you know, who knows what he's going to be. They all had very high expectations of him. Obviously, he was a gifted, intelligent student.
Yeah, clearly he was intelligent, but, like, you know, I feel like everybody kind of leaned into like, oh, you know, he was kind of a aloof. Like I would dare say call him a chameleon. He would be able to blend into every group. So they didn't really know what he was going to do with himself. And then all of a sudden he just up and disappeared one day and they're like, oh, all right, I guess that was just Martin Blank, whatever.
Well, you also get, I mean, you get a very evident sense that his home life was not exactly what you would call stellar.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah.
And there's probably a lot that played into that with how he dealt with school. You know for a fact that his father was an alcoholic.
Right.
He shows up to the grave. He opens up the bottle.
Whole bottle of Jim Beam.
The whole thing on the dad's grave.
Doesn't say a word, just stares at the stone, pops the top off, dumps the whole bottle.
You get the feeling that his mom always dealt with some form of mental. I got the feeling that that was always, like, she wasn't always with it to begin with.
Yeah, and I was wondering, obviously, maybe for the first time watching it to get ready for the recording tonight, how, like, was she committed? Because, like, when we do see her, the only time we see her, she's in an assisted living facility. Was she in that during his time in high school, and did he have to live with just his father? You know, because when he describes the story of how it was like he was sitting there in the rented tuxedo on prom night and he had like no concept of who he was, and so he just kind of up and left and joined the army.
He was a blank.
Yeah. He needed something to fill that in. And then he said once you get into that kind of work, there's always some kind of credo that the guys would hold on to. It's like live free or die, or like, you know, he's like, what was his? Like, his was like fighting against unchecked aggression or something like that.
Exactly.
He's like, that was a personal favorite of mine. But it was like, it's a really interesting kind of study of like a normal, like mild-mannered type person who also has within him the ability to become this. Because, I mean, again, it's very similar to John Wick. John Wick, for all the people who don't know he's a hitman or don't know he's crazy, he's like that nice guy who's walking his dog all the time. What's up, Ed?
Yeah, but like I can completely understand where he's coming from. Because, you know, like when I graduated high school, I had no idea what the hell I wanted to do with my life. I went to college for a year from medical school because my parents were doctors, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be a doctor. And I was like sitting in class one day, I was like, screw this, I'm done. And I joined the military, and, you know, like I totally like stuck to a credo, and I still do. It's like, you know, anywhere, anytime, anyhow, you know, with my specific career field. And I can completely see where he was coming from, and he was like, you know, I needed to do something with my life, and they gave me something, and now 10 years later I'm bored. What do I want to do now? So here I am trying to figure out what I want to do with my life again, back to square one.
And because he does not want to join the weird trade union that grocer's putting together.
Yeah, so yeah. Enter Dan Aykroyd in this film.
As grocer, who's another hitman.
Who?
One that wants to organize, basically wants to create a union of professionals so that they can, you know, collectively bargain contracts.
You know, it's sort of like a club. Work less, make more. Which I feel like work less, make more was such a huge buzz phrase in the 90s. Like going to high school and then hearing all people who are actually already in business always saying, oh yeah, work less, make more. It's great. You're just like, oh, so even, and I remember this being one of the first movies that kind of looked at criminal life in this sort of more legitimate light of day. Like, all right, let's just, let's, for argument's sake, let's say this is an okay decision to make. Let's say normal people go into this, and I'm doing normal with air quotes the whole fucking time. Asterisk if you need it. Come the fuck on. This is how people talk.
But what I also think is interesting is basically you're seeing that somebody who grew up in Michigan be anti-union.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, geez. Predictive.
No wonder he
didn't finish. Programming.
It's going deep.
Yeah, hey, man. This is the level that the mind control works with the Illuminati. But anyway.
Going back layers, like we said.
Yeah, man, yeah. And then I love the idea of how he's actually trying to be honest because he's trying to figure himself out, and nobody, it's like even still no one really takes him that seriously. Like, it is very Lloyd Dobler-ish, you know? Like, meanwhile, all these other people are like, Hampson, Raines, and Flomeyer. You're just like, oh, of course you fucking became a lawyer. I get it. Oh, of course you became an accountant. Yeah, sure.
Yes, with the used car salesman.
Bob DiStefano, didn't he fucking dislocate your shoulder? Yep. Yes, he did. And he dated my sister. It's like there's this all this crazy. I also, there's something about like a returning home story. You know, there's something about like that interplay of the characters where like we're learning all this history through vague dialogue, and unless it's being blatant exposition, but you know, like the little details that we have to pick up on, like the piecing together of the fact that like his teachers probably had a better relationship with him than his parents did, because yep. When he runs into Mrs. K and he said, and she's like, where are you going? He goes, oh, I'm going home. She goes, oh, are you? Like, she knows before he does that his house became a quickie mart, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like
she then blows up with a microwave and C4.
Well, he doesn't. The guy trying to kill him does. Felix La Poubelle. One of the people, as a
nationalist. That little detail.
Yeah, like made a huge showing with the Algerian separatists. Like, blow up a Greenpeace boat, remember? Oh, yeah, I know that guy. He's an asshole. You're just like, what? It's like, so there already is kind of a union out there. Or at least.
You're dealing with a select group of people, so they all, if they don't know each other personally, they probably know of each other.
Yeah, it's a rarefied profession, and the people who last long, you know, I'm sure their reputation far precedes them, or at least their signature look to their work.
And if you're acting independently, you're probably going to run across purposes at some time.
Yeah, well, I mean, like when
who else is out there?
When Grocer is. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Evan.
No, it's like in John Wick when he was walking through the bar, and everybody's like, John.
Yeah, and I was like
everybody
yeah.
knows who you are. Like, it's a very small world in that career field.
Yeah,
and at least half of that
everybody's a hitman.
Oh fuck, it's John Wick.
Right. Right.
Oh fuck, it's Martin Blank.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like the people here, you know, it's funny because at the high school reunion, one of the things that, especially I think, his friends, you know. Paul Spiricki and all the other people that he's kind of, a lot of women he's running into that were friendly with him, especially the one woman who has a baby and lets him hold the baby, and it's interesting because it's like here he is cradling life when he's often taking life, but like Paul is kind of like the Joe average everyman who, like when they run into each other, it's like they're friends that like almost like they never left. You know what I mean? Like that kind of friendship where you pick up as if it was just on pause that whole time. Yep. But all these other people are talking about how it's like you come back to this group that you used to be a part of, and immediately the dynamic has the tendency to go back to what it was when you all last saw each other. You know, and it's like people are actually kind of bragging a little bit with what they do. You know, there was the one guy who like became the security guard who like loves blank. He's like, oh man, you know, you taught me how to do archery class. You really showed me how to hit my targets. I love, thank you for that. You're like, yeah, you know, he's not going to kill Martin the day he comes in to kill a whole bunch of other people. Like, if Blank happens to be around the day this guy goes postal, Blank's getting spared. Everybody else, though, is getting fucking lit. And he's going like, you know, everybody who was in the Honor Society before, they get a little blue star on their fucking badge. Like, oh God, you were in the Honor Club 10 years ago? And you're just like,
what's
whoa,
it called?
Whoa. But
Dane Cook has that joke where he's like, you know, there's that guy who's in every office, like, you just want to be nice to, because, you know, on the one day, like, you give him candy bars all the time, like, one day he goes postal, walks up to your office, and he goes, thanks for the candy.
Yeah, and he just keeps going, and you're like, I am glad I became friends. It's almost like Billy Madison, too. It's like, glad I called that guy.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, no.
Chevy just.
Yeah, total prom night, and he like crosses a name off the list. Yeah. And so that's like the thing, though. Like, nobody ever would suspect when Martin says, "I'm a professional killer," that he could even possibly be telling the truth. Like, that's just the impression. That's the impression they have, you know? And even when he tried to, like, yell it to his friend, he's like, the friend was like, "Oh, cool. Well, could I join up?" And then he kind of, you know, just decided to go with it because,
or you know, Minnie Driver's dad going, "Oh yeah, I hear that's a real growth profession.
Growth industry." Yeah.
going to Minnie Driver, I realize she hasn't really shown up yet in the film,
and we haven't really spoken.
One of the things I really liked about this was that in a typical, if you're going back to like the typical '80s film, the Martin Blaine character would be finding redemption through the girl,
mm-hmm.
right? And she rejects that.
Oh, like, yeah.
She is not there to hold his hand and save him at all. Like, if he was looking for redemption, he's on this kind of redemption quest, she wants no part of that.
Right. Yeah. She's punishing him. You don't get to have me. You know exactly. What I mean? It's like,
that's not how this works.
Don't you get it?
Me. You yeah. deserved me 10 years ago. You don't deserve me now, you piece of shit.
Like, why didn't you realize it was wrong? Tell me about the dead people. And then we get a little bit of a kind of Boondock Saints argument coming up here, you know what I mean? Like, because he even says, you know, if I'm showing up at your door, chances are you did something to bring me there, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
like, you know, blew the whistle on the auto window.
He's like, you know, you should read the file on some of these fuckers. It's like a demon's resume. And at this point still, so I mean, part of the whole gig with the movie, with the genius and brilliance of how it's being written and how it unfolds, is he doesn't want to go back to this reunion. He's being pressured not only by his secretary, but by his therapist as well. And part of the impetus of his whole journey here is that Martin Blank, Mr. Proficiency, Mr. John Wick level focus, is starting to actually fuck up at work. Like, the first thing we see in the first scene is him taking out a target who's actually an assassin that was up trying to take out a mafia boss or something. Some guy who has a lot of personal bodyguards around him. So Martin does his job. He takes out that guy. It was a bike messenger who actually was going to just ride by and kill him. But after he's, like, you know, starting to take apart his rifle, all of a sudden, there's Dan Aykroyd popping the target.
357 just bah, 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 bah.
Popcorn.
And, yeah, his signature popcorn line starts popping up for sure. And, you know, it becomes this sort of the next time after he first hears about the so that's the opening of the movie. People are unhappy because, you know, we've come to expect this expert level service from your company. Okay, he goes to his therapist. He runs into Dan Aykroyd. All this shit. His secretary wants him to go to his reunion. His therapist wants him to go to his reunion. His next attempted hit fucks up again, and it's like the only way he can make good for all that is to go and take care of this target that just happens to be in his hometown. You know what I mean? It's like the gods want you to go home, and they want you to delete someone while you're there.
And he neglects to check who the target is the entire time.
Yeah. And she's constantly asking, whenever he calls back to the office, she's like, "Hey, is it done? When are you coming back? What's going on?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, it's fine. I'll do it tomorrow. So as he makes this huge, you know, we're jumping all over the place. At some point, the friends do find out he really is a hitman. And so she is upset. She's rejecting him. And when he's making that big defense of what he does, this, like, you know, if I show up at your door, you did something to bring me there. He doesn't know that his target is Minnie Driver's dad. You know what I mean? Which, the minute we meet him, you know that that's who it's going to turn. You're just like, oh, he's probably here to kill that guy. You know, like, because why the fuck else are we meeting
him? He kills Felix.
La Poubelle.
Yeah, La Poubelle.
That's when she sees him and Paul sees him. And, yep, and Paul helps him get rid of
him. He used the pen that Paul gave him.
No, it wasn't Paul's pen. It was the other guy's.
The lawyer's pen.
Yeah. Barry? What was his name? Something like that. It was some innocuous name. Once that happens, because Felix is in town. Grocer, who wants Martin to join this union that he's trying to found, and Martin says no, was the original contractor who was going to take out Minnie Driver's dad. And so when he finds out that they are giving it to somebody else, see, now it's like this thing where he thinks Martin stole the job from him. Meanwhile, Martin's being forced to do the job. So it's always, it's a very Greek tragedy kind of going on here for Martin Blank. And so he decides to put into motion not only him and his goons, but Hank Azaria and what's this other guy's name in real life? We'll go actor first, then character. K. Todd Freeman, who are playing agents Stephen Lardner and Kenneth McCullers of the NSA. NSA.
Oh, my so, God. I forgot about those guys. Jeez.
Yeah, so it's like, it is, it's almost like, I'm trying
to... Grocers basically feeding them Blank.
Yeah, while also trying to take care, also trying to, like, use it as leverage to get Martin to finally come around to join. I guess Blank is that respected, you know what I mean, as far as his talent. You know, so it's like, God damn it, dude. Like, usually if someone says no, we just say okay. But you're fucking awesome. I kind of refuse to let you say no. I really want you in my fucking team. And
yeah, I really want you in our club.
Because if you say no, everybody else is going to be like, well, you don't have Martin Blank, so why should I join you?
Yeah.
You know, John Wick, why would I even want to be near you guys?
Exactly. Wow, this really is the spiritual predecessor of John Wick. You know, it's just that John Wick was more of like, if you don't want it to be funny at all, if you want it to just be all business, that's John Wick. This is all business with a bit of casual fun on the side. The dilly-dallying and the procrastinating. You know what I mean?
Like, there's very few things I don't like about this movie. One of the things I don't like about the movie is how they kill off the agents at the end. How, like, they just, like, burst in, and both Martin and Dan Aykroyd look at them and just go, bah, 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 and then they're both dead, like...
Yeah, what did they think was going to happen? You know what I mean? They jumped into a giant firefight.
Well,
yeah.
they probably didn't quite think that Dan Aykroyd was going to be shooting at them as well.
Yeah, I would say that was probably a surprise, being turned on by the guy who turned them on to Martin Blank.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I just always thought this was such a cool movie. Like, everything about it was cool. And I will say, for any for those keeping track at home, I'm sure people have heard me talk about this before. It did. It was one of the movies that contributed not only to me kind of like what is a cool guy, what's a cool persona, but, you know, what to look forward to as far as like a coming home type of event like this. Like, this is the movie that actually really made me long for what it was going to be like 10 years after graduating high school and going back and going to my reunion. And is also what led me to being severely disappointed in the fact that my reunion was not actually like a reunion like this. It wasn't in our town. Nobody came home. My class officers, since they all migrated into New York City after high school and college, decided, oh, we'll throw a happy hour at a bar somewhere.
That's
not. And I'm
at least there was alcohol.
And I'm like, yeah, like 20 people went, 30 people went, something like that. I was just like, this is bullshit. Like, when I got the invite, I was like, I was so pissed. I was just like, absolute disappointment. But again, maybe I'm this weird nostalgia freak. Maybe I'm longing for an idea that doesn't exist, or a nostalgia that shouldn't have happened. Or maybe,
or
again,
it's like it, or, you know, reunions are a lot closer to how Joan Cusack put it. It's like everybody just got older and swole.
Yeah, it's like as if everyone swelled.
That's such like a like not professional, but that's such like a. Like
politically correct. Yeah, it's a politically correct way of...
Yeah, everybody just got older and swelled.
Yeah. I do kind of like the idea
of,
like...
Oh, Dante, I didn't know you were here.
Yeah, exactly. Excuse me. I do kind of like the idea of the bully, the moment he has with Cudlitz in the hallway. I feel like let's give Cudlitz a few minutes since he got
there
his head...
There is no us. Whatever you think there is, it's not here.
This stored up conflict between you and I does not exist. I don't know who you want to hit, man, but it's not me. So what do you want to do? And he's like, you want to do some blow? Like, it's just like
no, I do not.
So simple. He's such a simpleton.
Can I read you some of my poetry?
Or because he's like, I don't know what that is. Like, first, like, they kind of run into each other in the hallway at the reunion, and he's like, he makes some kind of snide remark about him being with Minnie Driver, and he's like, fine, Bob, how are you? And they kind of are about to fight. He gets him, he kind of talks him down, and the guy just pulls out, like, this piece of paper and holds it up to him, and he's just like, I don't know what that is. Like, the way he says that to him, some matter, like, what are you doing here? And he's like, these are my words. Great! Yeah, Bob, express yourself! And so he starts reading it.
to the end.
And he's like, all right, let's just go right to the end. For a while. You know, that's beautiful, Bob. You know, I wouldn't sell the dealership or anything, but I mean, you got something there. You know, and it's like, so he has these tender moments. Like, he's holding a baby. He doesn't fight the bully. And then, like, 10 seconds later, he has to fight another hitman. But that's just because that guy was going to kill him, so.
Yeah, like, instincts kick in at that point. You just go for it.
And at that point, you're like, well, I know I'm on this journey of self-discovery, but does that mean I have to stand here and let the guy kick my ass? Like, I did just watch Karate Kid 3 recently. I know that's an option sometimes. They throw it out there for you. Like, you don't have to fight. Just stand there and let him kick your ass. But yeah, that's a future episode, I'm sure. We'll do the entire Karate Kid saga, except for 4. I refuse to.
I realize we're kind of.
Is that the James?
So usually, I did not realize the woman who shows up drunk at their date.
Yeah,
is Ann Cusack. That's actually John and Joan's sister.
Oh my God! There's a third.
I have no idea. What
Jeez,
is this?
What the hell is this? Like Linda Hamilton having her twin appear up in T2 there, but yeah. Well, she does the best job of looking different. I mean, Joan and John have a very similar look. They look like they're related. The What was the third one's last name? Carol.
I think it's Ann Cusack.
Ann. Yeah, wow. Cusack. John, Joan, and Ann. Oh, I think we lost Ev.
No, oh, sorry.
Oh, never mind.
Yep, sorry. I minimized it just to look at something. Sorry. Go on.
It's all good. yeah, so what have we not talked about yet? I mean, we kind of are touching base. He winds up going to the reunion. He has to kill another hitman at the reunion. All hell breaks loose at the reunion, and that leads to them, the confrontation. I mean, I guess a lot of it, too, is the fact that he, even though he left on prom night, he has never stopped, like, being obsessed with Debbie, which is his girlfriend, played by Minnie Driver. You know, he even says to the therapist in the beginning, he's like, you know, I had another dream about Debbie. He's like, oh, you mean the woman you're obsessed with? And he's like, oh, don't you think obsessed is a strong word? He goes, dreams of loss and pain around the same person for 10 years? That's a little obsessive, maybe, just a little bit. He's like afraid to give real advice and answers about stuff because he doesn't want Martin.
Because I also
to kill.
Don't want to be killed.
It's like, and I love his little things he gives Martin. He's like, all right, I want you to repeat after me. This is me breathing. I am rooted in the me that is on this adventure. You're just like, oh my God, man. It was just, it's such a great balance of humor and violence and action and music and just cool. Like, it's got this sort of cool of like a Cameron Crowe movie, like a Say Anything, you know, and it's just like, it all works.
And then we have to talk about the end.
Yeah.
The fucking last fight scene where that's basically where they got the inspiration for the entire movie of John Wick, how he's just walking in and out of the house, just bang, 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 bang.
It's like every room, like they're just guys popping out. Like Dan Aykroyd brings an army, you know, he's got an army of hitmen.
I guess his whole clubhouse.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Ecstasy guys, and we didn't see the little butch Filipino ladies, the queens of the hotel hit.
Well, that's because you're in the hotel hit. You don't bring them to a home invasion.
Little stoppers. He's like, get little stoppers. Oh, man. He's like, yeah, I hate those guys.
Yeah. And then how he kills Dan Aykroyd with a TV.
Well, they like run, they do the whole, like, oh, I'm out of bullets. He goes, how about you? And he's like, oh, yeah, what, are you going to throw that gun at me? And he goes, you want to lend me one of yours? You know, this whole, like, back and forth.
Like, I'll sell you one for 100 Gs.
And he's like, all right, spot me. You know, and meanwhile, Martin, see, this is the thing, though. Martin can run out of bullets, and he'll still find the stuff around him to use. He has a little bit of almost of a Jason Bourne going on there. You know, like there's the one guy he kills with a frying pan. He kills
Felix with a pen.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, that was because he had nothing left. He just, like, shoved that shit right up under the chin. Let him bleed out, and then they put his body in the incinerator.
Combat pragmatist is what we call that.
Yeah. Is that what that is? A combat pragmatist. I like that. And I also like that Paul helped him move a body. You know, talk about awesome best friendship right there.
Right?
Absolutely.
You walk up on your best friend you haven't seen in 10 years, and you suddenly realize, like, he's kneeling over a dead body with a bloody pen in his hand.
Well, you know what they say. Friends help you move. Best friends help you move Bob.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, like, dude, he hasn't seen the guy in 10 years, and he, in that instance, realizes that he was telling the truth in his car the other day. Holy shit, this guy is a hitman. And he goes, we got to get rid of this guy. We got to move this body. But don't worry, no one's going to come looking for him. And they put him in the friggin' incinerator in the basement of the school.
Damn.
This is definitely, like, they do not know what they're doing sometimes, opening up their doors to these alums to come back to the high school. Who knows what people, like, at least somebody is a hitman who would at least be more incognito about it in real life.
Yeah.
But and also, I would say, probably just to quickly touch on Alan Arkin again one more time, one of my favorite scenes in this whole movie is at the after he's disposed of the body and he's calling Oatman to fire him, and like he's with another patient and he can't get the answering machine to mute, and he's like standing over it and he's like pushing every button and he's like punching it and he like grabs it, slams it against the desk and just throws it across the room, and she's just sitting there crying. Whoever's in his office is just crying watching all this going on. So,
well, how about I will say one of my favorite scenes is Joan Cusack tearing down the office.
Oh, yeah. Are we out of business yet?
It's that, you know, like, hitting the hard drive with a hammer, dousing everything with gasoline.
While smoking a cigarette.
While smoking a cigarette. She's like, it's all over.
And she's, like, singing a song to herself, like, not even discernible words. She's just like, and you're like, whoa, what, like, is going on here?
How much has she had to drink?
Well, I guess when you find out that the company's folding, it's time to start drinking. And then he does call her, let her know, like, hey, before you set the place on fire, check under your desk, like, real far back.
I'm going to find the bomb. Because that's what she thought.
Yeah. And then it's like, yeah, there you go, profit sharing, you earned it. And it's like this giant, huge brick of cash, all, like, shrink-wrapped. When it's shrink-wrapped, you know it's like, those are probably $1,000 bills.
Yeah.
And you know that it's going to be unmarked. And she's going to be doing okay for herself.
Yeah, this is like a stack of gold coins from the Wick universe. You know what I mean? It's like, earning a stack of coins? Not just one, like a stack of them? Burn down my office for
Except
me.
Here, she can pay. She can actually use them in the regular economy.
Yeah, go right on vacation. So Gross Point Blank, we probably did not do it the justice we did when we did John Wick, because we practically gave that movie a blow-by-blow commentary while we were talking about it. Is there any aspect of this film that is jumping out at us that we're, like, clearly overlooking?
I think the one thing we have not talked enough about is just how great of a soundtrack this movie really had.
It was one of the places I knew for sure I could find Faith No More's We Care A Lot, which, you know, is also on the album We Care A Lot, and on the album Introduce Yourselves. But if you didn't want to have to sit through all the tracks that you may or may not like on those albums, this was a good place to find it also.
Absolutely. I mean, just to give a brief sample, you've got Blister in the Sun by the Violent Femmes,
which I hated, but I know everybody else loves, so I
respect
it.
Oh, come on.
I know. See, there you go, right there.
You've got Under Pressure with David Bowie and Queen.
Classic.
You've got Mirror in the Bathroom.
Yeah.
For me, at least, is a classic film.
Is that The Clash? That's The Clash.
Clash is on there with Rudy Can't Fail.
But who did Mirror in the Bathroom?
Just Live and Let Die.
That was so awesome.
One song that's not actually on the soundtrack, which I think is a little bit interesting, there's no... So the song that the guy at the cashier at the Ultimar is listening to while...
Oh, yeah, it's Ace...
What's going on is Ace of Spades by Motorhead.
Yeah, that's not on the soundtrack. Interesting.
Now, to be fair, I mean, they cut back and forth with that so completely that you never actually hear the full song, so maybe that's why.
Yeah, but I love what they do is when he's listening to, or we're hearing Guns N' Roses, Live and Let Die, when he's outside the Ultimar, but when he walks in... It's like a convenience store version of
Oh yeah, very much so.
Live and Let Die playing.
But yeah, we hear a lot about Faith No More. Pressure Drop Specials.
Pressure Drop is good. Here's another song from Here's the Specials with one of their songs. Like when she's totally flustered and can't believe he just walked into the radio station. Yeah, this sounds like a friggin' ADD report on this movie. Like how all over the place we were. This was the most just like, look, you have to watch this shit so you know what we're talking about. It's not going to be a moment for moment. You got to just watch it and like so you know these like aspects and themes that we bring up. But
yeah, like if you haven't watched this movie, we did not do it enough justice. You need to watch this movie.
Yeah,
it is well worth your time. How long is it? It's like an hour and a half.
It's
hour 45.
Let's see. Runtime 107 minutes. A little bit longer than all of us thought there. But yeah, I mean, there's so many people in it. It's fun. It's got action, it's got romance, it's got so much going on for it. And it's John Cusack. Like, it's got just the right level of dark and light for it to not be too overwhelming either way, you know? There's a little bit of something for everyone in this one. And it is a huge 80s nostalgia movie, and in my mind, a 90s nostalgia movie, too, just because I remember watching it when it came out, thinking, like, oh my god, I was a kid during the time these guys were, like, my age now. You know what I mean? And like,
very much so. And I mean, if all you knew from John Cusack was like that time skip between the 80s movies where he was doing the teenage films and then jumping forward to this film, it's like, okay, so it's kind of the same character, but yeah, it's definitely 10 years older.
Yeah, grown up a little bit.
And actually, you watch him grow up a little bit during this film as well, I feel, because he does develop sort of that emotional connection that had been missing all that time for the first half of the film.
Yeah. Yeah,
you see him mature, and at the end, I think, like, you know, like when, at the end when, you know, he's hiding in the bathroom shooting people, just, you know, sticking his gun out the door and shooting, he's talking to Debbie the whole time, and he's like, yeah, you know, I think I really found myself, bang bang, you know, I've really done some soul searching on this trip, and I love you, and I think I want to be with you for the rest of my life.
And then the father's like, he's got my blessing.
He saved my ass.
Yeah. He must have done some naughty shit, Bart. It's like, because they're here to kill you, I should know. Like, these people were willing to pay to have you killed because I was the guy they were going to pay to do it. And you're like, holy shit, you're coming real clean. And I like, he's in his car going, I don't know if it's because I've got a newfound respect for life or because I'm in love with your daughter, but I'm not going to do it. And then in the car following him, Dan Aykroyd's like, he's either got a newfound respect for life or he's in love with that guy's daughter. And it's just like that kind of runner type thing they do in this movie a lot. There's a lot of these little sort of Easter eggy kind of insider type jokes that you have to like pay attention in the multiple viewings, you start picking them up. It's a fun movie. I am sad to see that even on the IMDb page it says the popularity for it is trending downward. So hopefully maybe our episode will be an attempt to reverse that, because holy shit, guys.
Come on.
Holy shit. What does it have? The Metascore is 76. I wonder what it is on Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes is like more of a true, in my mind, barometer of like what people actually think about movies, as opposed to just like, you know, there are people who'll just buy the movies when they come out, and sometimes on Amazon and IMDb, like it kind of like that skews the the rating. Why the hell is Rotten Tomatoes not showing up? How do you spell tomato?
T-O-M-A-T-O-E-S.
Oh, see, it's the E that I'm leaving out there. All right. Rotten Tomatoes. Gross point blank. Where are you? My computer's also slow these days. So, yeah. John Wick. Gross point blank. What's the trilogy? What's the third one? War Inc.? Is that
War
the
last?
Yeah, I think you said War Inc.
I don't know if we're going to do that next, but it's definitely
War Inc.
No.
Actually had John Cusack and Joan Cusack. Ben Kingsley was in that.
Ooh.
Who was the... I'm trying to remember what pop singer was in that.
It would be awesome if there were more crossover between the John Wick universe, actors-wise, and...
I'm just looking at... Hilary Duff was in that.
Ooh.
Marissa Tomei. Dan Aykroyd was in that.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, all right.
All right, so this has got a 79 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Like I said, Ben Kingsley.
And an 87 on Flixster. I agree with that, but I think it should be higher. So help us out. Help us help you help that.
I like how there's critics' consensus. No consensus yet. It's only been out since 1997.
Jeez.
Jesus.
That's sad.
But it had a score of 87%.
Yeah, I mean, it's an awesome movie. I never run into anybody who saw it and they're like, oh yeah, that sucks. And I'm like, yeah, it just doesn't happen. You know what I mean? It's just, it's universally loved. It's like Jon Snow. All right, well, this has been fun. Stay tuned. We've got a whole slew of films on the list to come. I guess we're kind of out of Halloween season now. I guess we're heading towards the holidays, so maybe things might start taking a little bit more of a festive turn. But knowing us, they're also going to be taking deep cuts into the world of classics, modern classics, and all kinds of stuff. So make sure you tune in for all the fun. Gomez, good luck for national, what is it?
National Novel Writing Month.
All right, man. Well, we're gonna be looking for a zero draft that makes us all lose our minds. Anything else you want to promote while we're here?
I think that's about it for right now. Actually, I do have got a story accepted for New Realm magazine, which will be coming out November 11th.
Nice.
So be on the lookout for that.
Along with that movie, The Arrival, which apparently is another predictive programming film from your friends at the Illuminati. Cousin Evan, what's going on with you, buddy?
Nothing, man. College, grinding out, work.
There you go.
Life.
Hashtag adulting. Welcome to it.
Yes.
Yeah. 22, man. I just turned 22, so, you know, it's life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is not what they tell us to expect, but now you've been let in on the cosmos.
Mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell.
There you go. The voice of Parasite Eve? The mitochondria are singing to you.
God.
Yeah, well, welcome to it. Anyway, join us again next time, will you? And until then, we'll ask so you don't have to. What am I watching? You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow Nine Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, Cast. Email us at hollow9podcast@gmail.com or find us at our home site, hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, fangirlzone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow 9.